listener production.
Hi, I'm Adam Schwab. In this new episode of From Zero, we're stripping things back and launching a brand new format, which we call Startup Insider. I'll be talking to well-known founders and getting their unique insights and perspective by breaking down a hot topic in the world of startups. This week, I sat down with superstar Adir Shiffman, executive chairman of sports tech company Catapult, and we unpacked the controversial buy now, pay later sector. Buy now, pay later grew by becoming a tech version of the old lay-by model. The first buy now, pay later businesses were Klarna, which was founded in Sweden in 2005, and Affirm, which was founded by PayPal alum Max Levkin in 2012. The model hit Australia in 2013 when Zip Payments was founded. And a year later, a little business called Afterpay was founded by a guy called Nick Molnar. Welcome, Adir. How were buy now, pay later businesses able to grow so quickly in such a short time, in less than a decade?
I actually think buy now, I mean, this is going a bit against the trend of the narrative at the moment, but I actually think that buy now, pay later is a fantastic concept because it takes this idea of affiliate commissions and instead of doing a cashback type thing, which, you know, I had to go at cashback and back in the day, instead of just giving some cashback to the customer, they found that what customers really want is deferred payment plans. And so they used the cashback to fund that business model. I mean, who knew that's what customers want? I had no idea customers wanted 4 weeks to pay off their stuff. But you're right, it was the lay-by model, except you get the goods now instead of waiting until you pay them off.
So you talked about, and this is an area you know a lot about because I think you had a business, I forget what the name was.
I did. It was called Start Here and Then Price Bell, a cashback business.
Yeah, with Simon. So what these businesses, and there's a few of these, but we'll digress here a bit from BNPL to what affiliate marketing is. And when you talk about a little about that business and really Afterpay has built a lot of their business reputation on that sort of affiliate commission style business. So what was that business and how has that sort of dovetailed into buy now, pay later?
Yeah. So, you know, we came up with this idea that existed in the UK and the US at the time. I mean, you know, it's worth touching on affiliates. I mean, affiliate commission is pretty straightforward. E-commerce stores predominantly, they need lead generation. And there's lots of different ways to pay for leads. And the easiest way and the safest way is to say, when we sell something, we'll just pay a percentage of that to whoever referred that sale to us. And that's effectively the affiliate commission. It can be 1 or 2% on big transactions. It can be 10%. Typically, someone like a hotels.com might pay 5 or 6%. And so the idea was, well, you can kind of take this a step further and say, well, you know, Schwabi, if you want to buy something and get a portion of it back, how about we just share the affiliate commission with you? So, you know, we keep 3%, we give you 3%, for example, and that's the cashback model effectively. And so there have been a business, I mean, the most well-known example, it's not a very good business model, by the way. Like I sold it and took the cash because it's a credit card-esque model, this tiny clip of a transaction, and you need tens of billions of dollars to make that model work. I was never any chance of getting that volume.
Yeah.
But Cash Rewards was bought by ANZ for 100 mil not long ago. I mean, that was a great deal for the guys that sold Cash Rewards, if you ask me.
And that was that listed beforehand.
It was.
Cash Back out of Singapore?
Shopback.
Yeah. Shopback out of Singapore, which I think it was quite valuable, certainly at some point.
Well, everything was once valuable.
Yeah, last year. But I think that they've done all right. And obviously, Little Birdie, which is Gabby and Hezzy from Catch of the Day, another form of guest.
I mean,
on the
no
show.
One's making money, is my guess, with any of them. There's no Cash Rewards wasn't, and I don't think it ever could make money as a standalone business. I think that, you know, this idea of let's take the commission that we get from the e-commerce retailer, and let's use it in a smarter way to build a business than just giving some of it back to the customer. That's what BNPL did, and it's they're much smarter than what I came up with.
Is that what certainly Afterpay and Nick and has been regularly. Trump. So essentially how BNPL, just to the listeners, how BNPL works is you're a merchant. So Luxury Escapes is a merchant. Sleeping Duck's a merchant. We can pay.
Daily Blooms.
Daily Blooms is a merchant. We can pay 1% to call it the credit card. The banks who might, say you buy on credit card, you might pay 1%. PayPal about the same. Amex is a bit more because it's more premium. Or you can do something called buy now, pay later, which could be Zip, could be Afterpay. And they charge between probably, 1% if you're JB Hi-Fi and 7% if you're a fast fashion retailer with big margins. Mm-hmm. So it's a big spread, but mm-hmm. if you're, call it a normal business like hotels.com, use an example, they're probably paying about 3 to 4%, mm-hmm. I suspect. So they're paying 4% for Afterpay and Zip, and they're paying, Zip's a bit lower, 4% for Afterpay, 1% for a credit card. Mm-hmm. So it's a 3% gap. So the customer, by the way, doesn't see any of this. This is paid by
It's better for business. The customer because, you know, you can't charge this BNPL fee onto the customer, but you can charge the credit card fee to the customer. So the customer loves it.
Yeah. So customers love it. So, but as a merchant, you're going, well, hold on. Let's say look at a hotels.com.
Yeah.
It has a margin of probably 6%, 7% on a contribution basis. If they're giving 3 to 4% to Afterpay, that's a big chunk of their commission, so of their earnings. So as you said, that's where the affiliate model comes in. That's what Nick Molnar, who was one of the co-founders of Afterpay, has regularly trumpeted, and that we'll give you customers. We'll give you merchant facility, and we'll give you customers you wouldn't otherwise have.
And we'll increase the propensity of an existing browser to buy when they have BNPL as an option for purchasing. That's the other pitch that they have.
Yeah, that's one that's always troubled me a bit. And this was Nick's pitch to me back in 2016 when we were running Brands Exclusive and the home. And Nick is an incredibly good salesperson. Nick Molnar is an incredibly good salesperson. He's made $1 billion by being probably one of the best sales guys in the country. And his pitch was, well, we've got data that we create a bigger AOV, bigger basket size. And there's no doubt that's true.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about it from a long-term perspective, if somebody spends $300 on Brands Exclusive when they would have otherwise spent $100 because they've got this mm-hmm. buy now, pay later thing, leaving aside whether it's credit or not credit, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If they've increased their
basket. I mean, it's credit. We can just say it's credit.
We know it's credit. But leaving aside the legal nuances of credit and the politician stuffing up. So what we saw was a bigger basket size. But let's say Johnny from South Yarra pays $300, would have paid $100, has this buy now, pay later, Afterpay thing, pays $300.
Mm-hmm.
But Johnny hasn't earned any more money. Johnny's got no more money in the bank. Johnny has to pay the $300 back at some, or he can't use Afterpay again. So Johnny's financial situation hasn't changed. Johnny's paid more transaction one, but transaction two, three, four, five, six to 100, presumably Johnny's paying less. He hasn't earned any more as a result of buying this jumper. Does the AOV expansion argument only work in the short term and not in the long term?
It's a great question. So I think I'm going to do their sales pitch. I think not inadvertently, which would be, the real benefit would be if you offered BNPL and your competitor didn't, and so the likelihood of you taking that sale would increase. Definitely everybody back in the day saw an increase in conversion when they added BNPL. And so that was true. I think, you know, this is one of the problems. Once everybody adds something, then all of the benefit diminishes. And also, once there are 15 players in the market, they can't all claim to be bringing new customers to you because, you know, one of the studies I saw, I think it was by Macquarie, showed that customers did definitely love BNPL and would increase their purchasing propensity where BNPL was offered, but their loyalty was purely through the mechanism and not to the brand. And so, you know, I think that's one of the problems that's starting to rear its head now. Listen, I think I don't think this is going to be the long-term revolution in improving AOV because what you said is fundamentally right. It's just another form of customers buying something they can't afford today.
The piece on new customers is a really interesting one. So Luxuryscapes, we use several buy now pay laters. We actually built our own deposit functionality recently, which is working really well. But
interesting.
We, as part of that, because we're paying millions of dollars to BNPL in terms of court increased merchant fees and what we pay on credit cards. And the one interesting, and the point the BNPL make is we're giving you lots of new customers. So I asked my guys, well, pull some data. What percentage of buy now pay later are new customers? I said, it's 57% over the last 3 months. I said, that sounds okay. So what's our normal percentage of new customers? I said, it's about 51%.
Yeah.
So the delta increment is at best 6%.
Maybe, or that could be in the margin of error.
Yeah, in the margin of error. So there's a real question on, to your point, if everybody has BNPL now, which pretty much everyone does, is it just a matter of just switching? It's been, every merchant's been disaggregated in some way.
Yeah.
So that leads us to the next
point. Let me tell you something. Like, I don't know if this happened to you. I'm not going to say the brand, but things were so crazy that one of the brands literally paid us, I can't remember the number, six figures of cash up front to add them to our BNPL offering, not exclusive, to add them to our BNPL offering and put their logo on the checkout page with, and I think there was 6 months of no charge as well as the upfront payment. So, I mean, obviously we took it, but I mean, that gives you an idea of what was going on in this industry.
Well, that leads, and this is what we've heard in the US especially, I'm not sure that was probably an Australian.
That was in Australia, yeah,
but
yeah.
What I've heard in the US from insiders is certainly Afterpay and Affirm and Klarna, I'm not sure about Zip, who's got a quad pay business over there, but certainly Afterpay and Affirm are going head to head like crazy, offering far greater, offering sort of under 1% merchant fee or close to it, highly uneconomic, which maybe works if you've got a really long lifetime value of customer, but doesn't if you've got a short-term churn or people taking it off. And that, and your point's a really good one. If you look at how Buy Now Pay Later has gone recently, so we had, if you look back, if we did this chat last year, Buy Now Pay Later is on top of the world. So Afterpay.
Except we would still be having this conversation and everyone would just think that we're idiots.
Probably. And yep. They possibly still do. But yeah. But if you go back to a year ago, Buy Now Pay Later, Afterpay had been offered $39 billion in script from Square.
Rolled into Square.
So as it turned out, I think at the time of the acquisition, it was about $17 billion. So that Square's price dropped off a lot. Afterpay's also dropped. They dropped in tandem. Some brokers now value Afterpay at zero as part of Square. Some give it more value.
Which I think is way too harsh, by the way. I think that's way too harsh.
I think it's probably not far off, but it depends how much you value the affiliate business at. You've got Klarna that's dropped from, a $45 billion valuation, be it from SoftBank, which is famous for getting it wrong. I think it did a recent raise, or it's finalising a raise. It tried to raise at 30, tried to raise at 15. It's got it away, we think, at 6.5. Yeah. And that's with Sequoia, who's an existing investor. Who knows what the terms are? Sequoia's probably driving that pretty hard.
It's not common stock, let's just say that.
So I think what you're saying is probably a highly favourable preference.
Protected investment.
So 6.5 is probably close to zero, that round. Affirm's fallen from $45 billion to $8 billion. I think it dropped lower. It's come back up. And Zip, it's dropped by about 90%.
Yeah.
And then you got the small crappy ones that I won't even mention the name, that basically gone to zero. So you've got the big ones dropping from tens and tens of billions to single digit billions, still valuable businesses. Mm. How much is that? Is that an overreaction, or do you think that's a genuine reaction to all the issues you talked about, that the questions on the economics, the question on the real value it's providing to customers and merchants especially?
So these are my two thoughts on this. The first is, I think these are fundamentally smart businesses. The reason is just the economics. So a store sells something for X, BNPL lends X, they keep 4% of X, let's call it. It's paid back in 4 weeks. That's approaching 50% interest rates on that money. If you cannot make money on that kind of spread, like, you're a moron, okay? Like, whatever your operating expenses are, if you build a scale business with those kind of economics, that should be a cash machine. And I think it can be. But the second thing is this, you can't blame people for responding to incentives. And what the market said to all of these BNPLs is, the faster you grow your top line, the more we're going to value you. And these guys, because I think they were all guys, right? They all they all managed to sell down shares into this insanity.
Yeah.
And so you can't blame them for forgetting about generating any free cash, because the market was saying, we will make you incredibly rich provided you just focus on top line growth. And so what I think now is the market has lost interest in top line growth. Everybody, you know, all of these same investors that yelled for top line growth are now saying, why are you doing so much top line growth? Focus on the bottom line. And I think what you're seeing now is a pivot of business models to stop losing money and starting to take advantage of the fundamentally strong economics that can exist in businesses like this.
That's a really good point. And certainly you look at Nick and Ant from Afterpay, who are two of the smartest guys.
And I'm a big fan of Larry at Zip as well. He's a great guy and smart.
So all these guys, three guys, and Larry sold, I think, about $30 million down, but
He's Nick, got a partner there, a co-founder there as well.
Pete, who unfortunately I don't think sold down. Mm-hmm. Philip Crutchfield, who was chairman, sold down, I think, at the peak. So probably one of the greatest trades you'll ever see.
Never bet against a QC.
Yeah, exactly. but if you look at Anthony, Nick, they read the room perfectly. Mm-hmm. They sold to Square. Great. Literally the only thing that I think they got held up by a Spanish regulatory body. I could have sold it for effectively getting $2 billion each.
You say sold to Square, but I would say they realized that betting their entire net worth on this game was a dumb decision, so they rolled into Square to diversify their bet.
But the beauty of what they did is they had, as far as I know, had no covenants or restrictions. They can, day one of that transaction being consummated, which I think was about February,
yeah,
they could have sold 100% of their shares, and I don't think we'd ever know, because neither of them had to disclose. So US has slightly different rules on disclosure.
They should have sold 100% of their shares.
And I suspect they're pretty. I suspect that these guys are pretty smart. They probably did, if not a big chunk of it. So that they could very well be billionaires, even if the value of Afterpay is zero. So all credit to them. Two of the smartest guys you'll ever meet, and two of the nicest guys you'll ever meet.
You picked this whole trend, right? I mean, you were in BNPL way before any of these guys came out, correct?
Well, we had a business that had a number of businesses. So we had a e-commerce business that had travel businesses. Obviously, Luxury Escape still this day exists, and other businesses that we sold to various different people. And we had a guy called Josh Borenstein who did our M&A, and he was a superstar M&A guy. He used to work at Insight Investment, which was a VC firm, and Josh was friends with Larry, good friends with Larry. And Josh saw the buy now, pay later phenomenon this is 2015, maybe 2016. And Josh found a business called Touch Payments, founded by an ex-Rocket guy. Mm-hmm. And he was the third of the three. So there was Afterpay with Nick, there was Zip with Larry, and there was this guy.
Yeah.
And we bet on this guy. And he tried hard. The issue we had, and we found this out really early, and this is in 2016, is that the unit economics just didn't work. So what would happen is, we'd charge three, and you talked about the 3-4% and that great model at churning 3-4% four times a year, or six times a year, which makes sense. The problem was the losses that the business we invested had were 5 or 6%. So we were lending at 4% and that call it paying 3%, lending at 4%.
You mean losses like people were defaulting?
Defaulting. The default rates were high.
Because it's unsecured, right?
Fully unsecured. So we were seeing default rates were higher than the margin we're making. So it just never worked. So we had a con note, we redeemed the con note and didn't have it at a loss. And the business I think shut down. But what we saw many years ago was it just didn't work. It didn't make sense. And I spoke to John Hempton, who's probably the best investor, one of the best investors in the country, about 2 years ago about this. Neither of us could understand how Afterpay was worth 10, 20, 30 billion or Zip was worth 10 billion. It didn't make sense. Didn't make sense for me as someone who invested in this space. Leaving aside the fact that we had record low interest rates. So this was if the business was ever going to make sense, it was then, because interest rates and funding costs were always going to go up. But before that time, we had these businesses that seemed to be able to solve this fraud, call it just lack of security.
Creditor risk issue
that we couldn't see. And John Hempton made this great analogy to me. I'm sure John won't mind me repeating it because he picked this yet again. John seemed to pick every one of these. And John said, essentially what all these buy now, pay laters are, they're effectively like an unsecured creditor of last resort, like a pawn shop in the US.
Yeah.
And if you go to the US, and it gave me this great analogy about jewelry stores in the US, essentially sort of money lenders. So if you go into a jewelry store, and this is what John told me, I don't know, but John goes, every jewelry store has almost always a mum, a 50-year-old mum, who's effectively the credit analyst. So she'll look into the eye of the fiancé, so the husband's, and the guy's proposing to his wife, or partner or wife or husband or whatever it is. And let's just use example of husband finding to wife, because this is the most relevant case in this case. So that 50-year-old lady would look into the husband's eyes and look at the couple and go, is this couple going to stay together? Mm. If the couple's going to stay together, this person's probably a good credit risk,
because
if the guy's taking the wife's engagement ring, marriage isn't going to last too long. Yeah. So the wife's looking going, are these guys going to stay together? Good credit risk. But what she's essentially doing is making a really detailed credit assessment based on first party interactions. And they're lending $1,000, $2,000, $5,000, whatever.
It's like the human actuarial table, right? The
exactly.
human face actuarial table.
And you've got someone who's got years of experience and does this for a job.
Yeah.
Afterpay worked like that, but didn't even look at you. All you have to do is type in a couple of things, didn't check bank accounts, didn't check anything. So sure, it's no surprise that there's going to be a pretty high default rate on these, as you say, unsecured loans.
How do you align that with the credit card industry? So you've got Afterpay making better margins than the credit card industry. Like, people just don't realize it, but they are. And their spreads are better than the credit card industry. And that industry can manage its default rate and its unsecured lending. And there's various mechanisms it uses to manage it. And so you would think that if you applied the same methodology as you do with credit cards to Afterpay, it would work, unless your argument is, credit cards just would say no to every single person that has gone to Afterpay.
I think it's a really good point. My view on that would be, credit cards have a slightly lower risk tolerance. So if you think of people who have credit cards, you got to go to the application
process. You have to apply for a credit card.
You got to have income, or you got to say you've got to have income. I'm sure if you get one once and you don't pay back, you get restricted. So I think it's hard to get a credit card. If we look at who are the demos of credit cards, certainly older and wealthier than buy now, pay later, which tends to be younger, millennial or younger.
Absolutely.
Less income. So I think there is a difference in profile. But if you look at Afterpay, I don't think Afterpay's ever made money. It's come close a couple of times.
Yeah.
And certainly its losses have increased. And one thing that always concerns me for any business, and this is, remember I wrote about ABC Learning Centers 15 years ago. The thing that concerned me about ABC, even when it was worth $1 billion and everybody loved it, was as it got bigger, its losses widened. And I hate a business that makes, that loses more money as it gets bigger, because something, you should get scale benefits in any business. As
Agreed.
You grow, you just split your costs over more customers. Afterpay had the opposite, and so did all the buy now, pay later. As they got bigger, they lost more money. And that really concerned me. And it feels like I think Afterpay found its patsy in Jack Dorsey, who's probably one of the worst CEOs who's ever lived. Twitter was a disaster under Jack Dorsey. He went to Square, which looked like a great business. Then he spent $20 billion on Afterpay, which is arguably worth nothing. So,
And a lot of Square's business was crypto related.
Absolutely. And that's all clearly fallen away. A market values a crypto transaction differently from its Cash App, which is essentially Venmo. So if you look at the value of Venmo, it's a few billion dollars. Mm-hmm. And Square was worth, I think at one stage, $250 billion for having what was a part of PayPal, essentially. So what are your thoughts on where does buy now, pay later go from here?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think I happen to have some kind of insight into the credit card industry. I worked with those banks many years ago for quite a while. You know, credit cards is a funny business. Like, there's this Goldilocks zone of credit cards. When you have a credit card customer, if they can just pay back the entire amount every month, that's not a great customer, because you just make your fee on them and maybe some merchant exchange, you know, fees. And if they default, that's a catastrophe.
Yeah.
And so what you need is a customer that is prepared to pay the minimum and maybe a bit more, but roll.
Yeah.
And so they're just accruing more and more interest, but they'll keep paying it for whatever reason. And so it's not the most beautiful industry to be involved in. Maybe let's characterize it like that. And so I think Afterpay, we're talking about Afterpay, BNPL in general, I think the service is valuable. I think there are particular benefits over a credit card, but unless they can go and eat the credit, those Goldilocks zone credit card customers, then they'll struggle.
Yeah.
But if they can find that customer and find a value proposition, then they should be vastly more profitable in credit card businesses if they can find that zone. But they just, you know, they need to do what they're doing now, which is, you know, we both know the people involved here are smart people. They were going on this tear, expansion, burning cash, because that's what the market was paying them to do.
Yeah.
The market's not paying them. So they're doing all of the smart things now. They're pulling back their businesses, focusing on their core geographies, you know, cutting this insane marketing spend. I mean, I bought something from the Good Guys and they said, if you pay with PayPal, we'll give you like $100 credit. And if you pay with Pay in 4 by PayPal, we'll give you like, what, $150 credit or whatever. And it's like, really? Like, that's insanity. And so, of course, I did it, right? But it's, so I think those days are coming to an end. And I think if they can find customers in the Goldilocks zone and entice them, these will be good, really good businesses. And if not, they'll be dead businesses.
Yeah, I guess, is there one more? And I think I totally agree. Is there one more tricky issue for them? Is we've had a world of interest rates of being historical low. So interest rates haven't been this low really ever.
Yeah.
We've had a 10-year everything bubble which seems to have inflation effectively crystallized in assets, not consumer prices. We've seen that reverse in the last 6 months. Eventually, I think the COVID spending pushed that over the edge. But regardless of that, we've seen funding costs have increased and probably will keep increasing and potentially normalizing. You can very much argue that the interest rates should be 8 or 9% based on inflation levels. In a world of 8% interest rates, do these business models work?
BNPL is revolving their money at 50% per annum. I just keep coming back to that. Like, that's with zero defaults. Obviously, there's going to be defaults. If you are a credit business and your customers are effectively paying for your pool of money at 50% per annum and you can't figure out how to make money, there was never a business there to begin with. Like, you can turn over the whole management. You'll find management that can make money out of that rate if there's a business there. So I think that's what it comes down to. Can they find a customer that, and so, you know, the other challenge though, the flip side is we're assuming that these rates remain constant.
Yeah.
My guess is that the power will start shifting back towards the retailer. And so 4% might turn into 2% or 1%.
Mm.
And then you become a credit card margin business. That's a whole separate story. Can there be a business there? I hope there can be a business. These are one of those things where I think a couple of them will end up having been very cheap right now. It's just very hard to pick like which one is not going to be that one and what's going to die, right? I'm too risk averse to like the going to zero.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think there's probably not much value as a whole, but time will tell. Thank you, Idea, for joining us. It's fantastic to have you on and hopefully we can do it again.
Absolutely.
This is our first episode of Startup Insider. We'll see you soon. Our producer is Ed Gooden. Our audio producer is Darcy Thompson. For more episodes, search From Zero Podcast with me, Adam Schwab.